Stoked, Steve!
Hey, listen to this guy. Tell me how you're feeling here. You're screaming.
I am stoked, baby!
You're screaming like it's still the game going on.
We're talking about the fightings here. The fightings! Said!
Said, Mike. Been...
First time, long time, welcome. Come one, come all. I'm Smitty. We got a full house today. We got Booze Derek, Philly Mays in the booth. We got a special guest coming on in a little bit. You're going to want to hear him. You definitely have seen him around, specifically recently, but you're going to love him. Believe me that. And for the first time in a long time, unironically, we got Roan back, fresh off of marriage and a honeymoon. Congrats, my friend.
Yes, sir, brother. I got a ring on my finger just so I can try and emulate one of the teams in the last decade in Philadelphia. Hopefully, they'll be following in my footsteps. A couple rings coming. Maybe it'll be the Phils. Who knows what direction we're going. It was a beautiful time. Beautiful wedding in Philly. Waterworks, you know what I mean? We were doing it behind the Art Museum. Beautiful honeymoon in Hawaii. Happy to be back with the boys. Happy to be talking Philly sports.
I mean, you come back and the Phillies are in first place. The Eagles aren't as dickless as they usually seem. Sixers kind of maybe working towards a trade for Dame, and the Flyers are getting defensive help. So, Roan comes back. Good things happen.
Yeah, I'm pretty fired up about it. I honestly don't want to touch anything. I don't want to mess up the juju. I don't want to have any kind of butterfly effect of me coming back and ruining everything, because I felt like I left. Things were in shambles. Rome was burning, and I'm back. And it's damn near utopia. I mean, the Phillies are the hottest team in baseball right now. They're a joy to watch. Everything's whirring in the right directions. All the bets seem to be winning. Smitty's the hottest bettor at all Barstool Sports. The Barstool Sports book's opening up everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you can still get pretty decent odds on not only the Phillies to win this East. I mean, pretty almost straight up odds on that. Mm-hmm. But the Cy Young and the MVP could be coming home too.
Yeah, Bryce is second in the Cy Young odds behind Fernando Tatis, where you don't know what's going on with his injury. And Zach Wheeler is favored right now in the Cy Young for the NL, which is incredible. The Phillies very well could have both the Cy Young and MVP for the National League and still be fighting to fucking get above 500 by the end of the season. So that's
good stuff. Yeah, but the good news, I saw as soon as the Nationals-Mets game kicked off, Juan Soto in the very first inning blasts a three-run home run. So the Mets are still in shambles, which is good.
No, the Mets are done. They were the most worthless, hopeless, dickless baseball team, sports team, the worst humans in existence over the weekend. I watched every out. I was there Friday night. Great stuff, by the way, for Philly fans coming out and silencing those assholes who've taken the ride down 95. The Mets stink. They're done. They're absolutely hopeless at this point. The Braves, you kind of got to worry about them. Both the Phillies, what worries me about them, and it's a rain delay right now as we're recording this tie ball game with the Dodgers. Worries me is that when they're hot, everything's great. 8 games in a row. It's fantastic. When they're cold, they're 6 feet under cold. I mean, if you recall, before this 8-game winning streak against the Nationals, Mets, and Pirates, 3 not great teams, they were one hit by the Pirates, and they followed that up with a one-run performance. I hope that doesn't come anytime soon again. This Dodger series is going to tell a lot about them, but they do worry me. I'm just going to say, they worry me, even after this 8-game winning streak. And the Braves, they're not really going to go away.
Yeah, the Braves are definitely pesky right now, but I think that you didn't spend enough time dancing on the grave of the Mets. I think that that's something we really need to invest a little bit of our priorities in, because the Mets talked so much shit. Everyone was furious at our coworker, Frank the Tank, for being doom and gloom about the Mets. And then Frank's prophecies 100% came through. He had the anti-Midas touch. Everything that he touches turns to shit. And the Mets even tried at the deadline. They tried to add people, and they didn't add who they wanted to, but they still added some quality bats to their lineup, and they still suck. Mm-hmm. And they're still falling apart. I loved watching them swell in optimism early on in this season and completely have their balloon popped and it doesn't look like it's about to get any easier for them. They have a terrible stretch coming up in the next four series as far as tough opponents that they're playing against. But I do agree, we have to worry about the Braves. Our offense looks good, but there's also like a lot of games that we kind of seem to be eking out that they're, we have to rely on our pitching. We have to rely on our bullpen. And it's a good thing that we shored up our bullpen a little bit. They're looking better than they did early in the season, but that's not really a hard thing to do because they didn't look good at all early in the season.
Yeah, the bullpen, the bullpen's still below average, but that's better than historically dog shit. So they stay below average to average. We're going to be just fine. And the lineup, I mean, I kind of gave a backhanded compliment of them winning eight games against shit teams. They've been doing that without Kutch. They've been doing that Reese's on the 10-day DL. I mean, they're clicking. They're stats since July 1st. They're leading the majors in, like, a lot of offensive categories. So as long as they keep firing, as long as they keep winning, it's all good things. But still scares me. Girardi still scares me with some of his decisions. The Braves still scare me. Well, we'll see what happens.
From where you guys were in your confidence level in the bullpen from a month ago until now, how much different is your confidence level? Because knock on fucking wood, it seems like it's gotten so much fucking better.
My confidence is astronomically better because earlier on with the bullpen, it was the familiar feeling that we have being Philly guys that when you just know something's eventually going to go wrong, it just lingers in the back of your head. And it's almost like some kind of psychological torture. And a little bit of that psychological torture has been alleviated. Like, it's not just there. Like, there is a sliver of hope. It was almost like Sixers teams over the last, like, couple years before we got Doc Rivers. Like, you could feel when a team was about to fall apart, when they were going to blow a big lead. And you stop feeling it a little bit this year. And even though that season didn't end how we wanted to, having that pressure gone in the back of your head is a nice feeling.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, they've gone from historically dog shit to a little bit below average. Okay, good. You brought in Ian Kennedy. What does he do? He kind of struggles every single outing he's been in, besides the last one where he's just blown him by Pete Alonso, who is basically worthless at this point against a fastball. Hector Neris looks good in the seventh inning role where there's not a lot of pressure on him. But then he gets to the ninth inning, you're up 5-0. And this fuck job Lovera, straight out of independent ball, comes in, gives up back-to-back-to-back home runs. So you're never really that safe with the bullpen. But, again, they just go below average to average. They're gonna be okay.
In this young month – of August right now. We're eight games into August. We're in the rain delay right now. But the Phillies already have just one fewer save than they had last month in 26 games, three times as many games. Like, the bullpen is putting them in more opportunities to be helpful, you know, to win games, to have these save opportunities, but they're also saving the game. Like, they're the bullpen is holding up where they're supposed to.
Let's get into the voicemails, Booze. Get it cooking.
So the first one's not like a Phillies one, but it's kind of funny.
Hi, I'm calling because I want you to feature the change petition I have for bringing back the Schmitter at Citizens Bank Park. If you can promote it on your podcast, it's change.org/the Schmitter. I'm trying to get to 100 and I need 38 more, so I need your help. Thank you.
I don't want to sound like I'm out of touch here, but they took the Schmitter off the menu.
Oh, dude, they took it off the menu. Like,
yeah. Well, so the Schmitter is awesome. McNally's Tavern in Chestnut Hill is the original Schmitter. For those who don't know, if you don't know, I'd be shocked that you're listening to this podcast. But I did know that the Schmitter was not technically not as good at the Phillies ballpark. I think that's why they took it out. I don't know if that's true. I mean
you're not gonna get the best quality at the ballpark as it was the original. That goes for Tony Luke's at any of the stadiums. That goes for the crab fries, where you're gonna like hold half the fucking time. But I'll be honest, I've never had a Schmitter at the ballpark.
Oh dude, it's so good. And for
I've had it at the tavern, but I've never had one at the ballpark.
And for those who don't know, the Schmitter is the key ingredients on this beloved sandwich: thin sliced roast beef, Hatfield salami, Kraft American cheese, thick tomato, thinly shaved onions, a special sauce that includes ketchup, relish, and Worcestershire sauce, and all on a Kaiser roll.
Look at that. They took it off in 2016. We moved to New York. The Schmitter leaves.
I mean, Smitty, and this might sound controversial, but I'm in the same boat as you. It's like kind of like a Russian or like a French dressing. I'm not the biggest fan of that dressing. Never had one at the ballpark. But I'm not a fan of sandwiches where they try to put everything on the sandwich, where you try to have like 16 different flavors and like a sauce that goes on top of this flavor that doesn't go with this meat, or like slapping everything together. I respect the tradition, and I would gladly sign this petition to bring it back just because it's a staple food. It's a famous food, one that we have and not a lot of other people do. But to be honest and candid, I'm not wild about even the idea of it.
You know what I am wild about? Bowls barbecue. Delicious.
Yes.
Delicious. The pulled pork. Fantastic.
What's your guys' favorite, like when you're at, let's say, okay, we're in Citizens Bank Park. Where do you get your food? It's not Dollar Dog Night. Where do you go?
I hear people's criticism of crab fries, and I don't care. I still get the crab fries.
Yeah, every time.
It's just a matter of like, there's so much cheese, B, there's so many fries, and it's just like it's just a matter of shoving something in my face for a long period of time. Like, it's not necessary. It's just like a simple flavor, but it's just, I just want to eat for like 4 innings straight, and the crab fries let me do that.
But you know what the problem with crab fries are? If you're not getting them at Chickies and Pete's, at the bank, the line is biblical. The link, they're fucking cold. And at Wells Fargo, I mean, you got Lorenzo's Pizza right there. Might as well stuff your face. I mean, crab fries, they're good. I wouldn't say they're the greatest thing to write home about.
So what's your go-to order at the stadium then, Smitty? Is it the Lorenzo slice?
Well, yeah, during Sixers and Flyers game, it's Lorenzo's. Citizens Bank Park, it was straight to Bulls barbecue. At the link, it's all alcohol. You got to save those calories, baby, for Jetro Lot.
Well, plus, when you're at the link, you're usually eating throughout the entire day because you're usually tailgating. So you're just stuffing your face all day.
It's too there's too much anxiety and nervousness at Lincoln Financial Field to worry about food inside the stadium.
Before we move on, shout out McNally's Tavern. So check out, I love that voicemail. Go sign the petition and support McNally's Tavern in Chestnut Hill. Go get yourself the original Schmitter, and hopefully we see it at the ballpark. Grab yourself a pint at McNally's too. Friends of the family. So I'm a big McNally's guy.
We're going to move on from the Schmitter and wrap up the Phillies talk with our special guest. You're going to want to hear him. We're talking about the Fightins, baby. All right, believe it. We got our first guest ever on First Time, Long Time, and what a guest it is. Please welcome Jack, JB the Third, also known as the Fightins guy. Sid.
Yeah, we're talking about the Fightins here. The Fightins. It is so my pleasure, guys, to be on board with you this time through. We'll talk a little Phillies. We'll talk a little past. I'm very, very interested in getting this thing fired up. We got 8-1. They're on tonight. I don't know what else to say. Just keep this ball rolling. They talk about last 10. Let's talk about what happened the last 15 hour. I'm just looking forward. It's just a beautiful season, and things are happening right so far. So
what's your deal? You grew up around the area. You got season tickets. You just stumble upon there one night, just became an internet local sensation. How we get here?
Oh, God, man. I used to go to the 50-cent seats in the Vet, dude. You remember when it was all yellowed out and blued out up at the top, the 700 level?
Yeah, 700 level.
Oh, yeah. Greg Luzinski used to power him up that way, Schmitty, back in the day. I have a really cool photo of the spot where Willie Stargell hit that monster shot, and the Vet emblemized it with the star, if y'all recall that. Baseball in my family is traditional. And, yeah, we go back. Well, I go back to the late 70s. But as far as that particular day, no, that wasn't just a perchance. It was kind of a fluke, actually, if I met. The Phillies, they were coming back from San Francisco. I believe at that point they were down 3-2. and they were coming back for game six. And they were on the buses coming in from the airport. And I imagine there was 1,000 people or so. And everyone was, they had the face paint, they had their attire, they had signs. So I'm trying to cheerlead this thing and this happening. And all of a sudden, here comes Steve Keeley, and he wants to know, you know, where's the game? He says, you sound like there's a game still going on. I said, dude, we're talking about the fightings here, man. And he started asking me questions. I said, said. I said, that was my mic drop, I suppose, upon reflection. Yeah, my whole thrill was actually to get a couple of baseballs autographed by Charlie Manuel on that morning. The said guy thing was just like, I don't know, kind of cray-cray.
It was divine. That's what it was. It was divine.
It was. It was some sort of intervention going on there. And I imagine it was me.
That's right. It was a stroke of genius. So what was your like internet/TV fame like? How did you start realizing that this is something that people were latching onto, something that people were into as like a catchphrase or a meme, if you will?
Well, if you note the date, we're talking about 2010, right? So now we're talking 11 years after. So I want to answer your question. There hasn't really been that much, but up until date. I guess I was more famous for them seeing the said guy throughout history. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. I would suggest that you check that out. What was going on there is that an artist implemented various different historical events, such as John F. Kennedy making a speech, and then you hear me in the background saying, said. And now, again, to get back to you, with all this, my niece shows up. I was pleasantly surprised to see her, and she was talking about you guys and about how, you know, I'm a fame and there's a t-shirt, and I'm like, what? So I go on your website, and I'm like, I said, dude, that's me. That's cool. So there's your answer. Very recent. Within the past 72 hours, it's been exploding my brain.
So people don't realize that it wasn't during a game, like coming out afterwards. It was like trying to get the team riled up around the buses. And there was no like extracurricular things going on there. You weren't bundled. This is all just for the love of the game.
No, you didn't have the, you have your string band that always shows up at the games. You didn't have any, you had not a squat. You had myself. And like I said, I would say roughly 1,000 fans. And to everyone's tribute, it was a harsh road trip.
Yep. With who was the closer with the beard? That was a bum, like thereafter. Brian.
Yes.
Brian Wilson.
Brian Wilson, yeah. Yes.
That was the game that Pat Burrell hit the double and drove in a run. It was his only hit of the playoffs, and he scored a run. He drove in a run, yeah.
It's a legend. Let's get Pat Burrell in the Hall of Fame. Let's retire those numbers. Let's get that train going. But Jack, I got a question for you, because earlier you mentioned the 700 level. What a beautiful place that was. Can you remember your craziest thing that you ever saw in the 700 level? I know that you probably saw the entire Barnum and Bailey circus up there, teenagers fighting with each other, drunk people sucking on toes or whatever. But what was the craziest thing that you remember seeing in the 700 level?
That's an awesome question, dude. And I got to tell you, Flagman, it wasn't anything outlandish, but when Flagman walked around the inner concourse around the vet, you remember it did have a totally exposed.
Right.
And when Flagman started, he would be the first person and the last in line was directly behind him. That entire Veterans Stadium concourse loop was full. Again, now the inner portion, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the vet, if you recall.
Of course, where they used to hang all the banners during mm-hmm. the Eagles game, like they would hang down.
Yeah, that was like off the 400 level, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was the middle level. Okay.
You had the 400 level, then you had the 500 level, and then you had a walkway that went all the way around, then it was 6 and then 7. So you could be standing there, and the guy right here in row 1, section, whatever, in the 600 level, you're standing right in front of him. I believe it was the only way to gain access. You had to come up, whatever. I walked this concourse. But to answer your question, Flagman, it had to run 1,200 people. to complete that loop. That was very entertaining. Fights, I don't know. It was more like you couldn't wait for the Mets to come in. You loved when the Mets came in. I have a shirt, METS, my entire team sucks. I love it.
We got to bring those back.
Yeah, that's a good one. Hey, ride it hard, man. Just put it up in your display.
So what's your favorite Phillies memory of all time? You've been around. Give it to us. Either personal or what you've seen.
Yeah, Chase Utley. Forgive me the game, but he faked the throw. He made the play, at the plate. That was back in, I think it was 2009. It was the game for the World Series. Was it Milwaukee, possibly?
Who do they play in the divisional round there? They played the Dodgers again.
I believe it was Milwaukee because I think at that time CC Sabathia was still on the Brewers and we lit him the fuck up.
Yeah, that was 08.
Oh, that was 08. Oh, you're right. Yeah, that was 08.
That was game five. That was like right after the rain delay. That was like they scored the run, they went up, and then like Chase Utley saved it and they kept the lead, right? Wasn't that like
– Yeah, that was in the World Series.
Yeah, they played the Dodgers or the Rockies in 2009 divisional. And then the Dodgers smoked them 3-1. Let's go.
The Rockies, classic.
2007 against the Rockies, the networks robbed us. They gave us the night games in Colorado, if you recall, 2007.
Yeah, I mean, that series was a disheveled hoax from the beginning. We were supposed to play another team. Rockies came in and won like 20 straight games coming into that series. Meanwhile, they schedule the entire Phillies Rocky series during when Springsteen's playing at the Wells Fargo Center. I mean, it was a sham from the start, but it's okay. We got an 08.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. The mother.
These are the classic memories.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. So obviously when Steve came up to you, you were way too fired up to even, you know, even acknowledge his existence. But that's just kind of what us Philadelphia fans are, right? When we get fired up, nothing can bring us down. So what's your biggest pet peeve about Philadelphia sports?
Sometimes overthinking things and God forbid they lose tonight. They're going to be bums for not winning 9 games. Yeah, sometimes we just so pushing.
You're like, we like to overreact a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, thank you. I meant no disrespect to anyone because I'm the same way. You know, I'm talking effing bums myself, you know. I remember Bernie Prunt when he wore number 30 for the Flyers. He was terrible, terrible. Now we're talking about the great number one, Bernie Perron. You know, that was after the trade, you know.
I mean, only Jesus saved more than Bernie, you know that.
Only Jesus saved more than Bernie. Amen to that, my brother.
We'll cut you loose after this, but what's left on the plate now? What do you need to see? You saw a Super Bowl. You saw a World Series. You've been alive for the Sixers. You were alive for the Flyers. Well, what else? What do you need?
I saw 2 Flyers Stanley Cups. I was part of both Flyers parades, the grassroots one, the first one, and the second one. I actually almost got killed in the JFK Stadium. Crowd of people fell on me and this girl. We were in the stands and, oh my God, there had to be 130,000 people. OMG, you guys remember JFK, right?
No.
What?
It's not even close. No, we've heard of it. I mean, I was born in 84. Roan, you were what, 87?
88.
88, yeah, we're the old bucks here. Everybody else are 90 babies. We remember the vet.
That's why we got you on.
Yeah.
Am I going to be invited back?
Hell yeah. If the Phillies keep winning, you got to come back every episode.
Oh, I appreciate that much. I'm going to do my best on that then. Thank you. my fondest sports moment, the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. Yes.
I think that's the same for a lot of us.
Yeah, I love that. That's a beautiful one. That's a beautiful day. Let's just go get another one. That's all I'm thinking. Yeah. Let's just go win another one. Why not us?
Yeah, win every year. How hard is that?
You can do it. A couple of us made a mistake, and we said, okay, we'll trade 10 years of bomb for 1 Super Bowl. We're pulling that back. We're taking that completely off the table, Devil. We're going to win a Super Bowl in the next couple. I love this head coach. And I really, again, I love what you guys are doing with, I can't say radio. What are we talking about? Air celebrities, sound celebrities. You're bringing a whole new school to us all. And oh, if I may, please. I want to shout out to Big Daddy Graham. Mm-hmm. He's actually the first podcast that I ever paid strict attention to. And he's a Philly idol. You know, he's just a Philly icon. And I wanted to say hello to Big Daddy Graham. I know you guys are familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, yeah. Of course. Yeah. Shout out to Big Daddy Graham, an OG in the game. He's been doing it for a long time, and you've been doing it for quite some time yourself, sir. And we appreciate all the good vibes, all the luck that you've been bringing, all the good tidings and the cheer. And like, let's just ride this thing. Like, let's see how far this thing can go. Why not? Why not the Phillies this year? They're looking as hot as anybody in baseball. Let's just ride it out.
And you better believe it. If they don't lose before we record next week, you're coming on next week, the week after that. This is going to be your show. We'll just hand it over if they keep winning.
Talking about the Fightins. The Fightins. Set.
We appreciate it, Jack. Thank you very much.
Good stuff, brother. That was awesome.
You're awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jack the Third, coming on. I mean, we're talking about the Fightins, and we talked about the Fightins. Set. Beautiful man. We'll meet up with him again very, very soon. Hopefully.
You know what I love the move of blaming the networks for screwing us. I think that's an all-time move. Fuck those networks.
I mean, it's not our fault. We know that. Nothing.
It's the networks. You always forget. A lot of people get the refs can screw you, the other teams can screw you, but you never think of the network screwing you. That was, what a great point by our guy, Jack.
We got more voicemails. Let's cook.
Yo, fellas, is your boy, honestly, this is probably going to be really fucking dumb looking back in a few months, but I'm starting to get fucking hyped on the Eagles, man. I'm going to say it. I think they might actually be able to make some moves and win a very pointless NFC East championship and get rolled by some fucking good team in the playoffs. I mean, my Lotta turns out he's way better than Dillard, which may not be saying much, but it sounds like he may be a very legit guy. You got Sirianni taking time, talking to Jalen Rager, making sure he gets the reps in, like hard reps. You got Jalen Hurd constantly saying the right things, always trying to be like a better leader and a better player. I don't know. It'll be fucking ridiculous if they do win, but like, it's a fucking NFC East. That might not be healthy. Which, if he's not, then 100% getting Phillip fucking Rivers, mark my words. You got the Washington football team, which has a spooky defense, but they got Ryan fucking Fitzpatrick. He'll come out and crush Philly, but, like, at the same time, like, who knows what he's going to do with the other 15 games this season. And the Giants, well, they're the fucking Giants. Daniel Jones is a joke. I'd literally rather have Carson Wentz starting all the games, even if he broke his leg. But, yeah, fuck it. Who says we can't win? Why not us? Philly versus everybody. Yeah, let me get your thoughts, though. Love to hear it. Bye.
Why not us? Death taxes and people in the Delaware Valley having absolutely unrealistic hopes every single fucking year going into the Eagles season. I mean, I'll tell you why, like, that's completely unrealistic. I mean, there's plenty of ifs that need to go perfectly for this team to win maybe 9 games and be in contention for everything. The offensive line, which is aging and injury prone, need to hold up. The quarterback needs to be above average. Is Jalen Hurts even an average quarterback? We don't know yet, but he needs to be above average. Miles Sanders, who's reportedly having not a great camp, needs to step it up and sling it out. The receivers and even Goddard, all are unproven, need to do something. The defensive line, which could be one of the best in the league, needs to perform that way. The secondary, who's all on one-year contracts besides McLeod, need to come through. The defense as a whole, which is running a basically all new system under a new guy, needs to perform. So if every single thing falls into place, maybe they win 9 games, maybe. But what the fuck? What are you doing after that, Roan?
It all comes down to the quarterback for me. And it seems like the offensive line is pretty good. But if you have a stellar quarterback, you can make sure that your receivers are going to be good. I don't know if Jalen Hurts is going to be stellar. I want him to be so badly because the way that he's a leader, the way that everybody talks about him as a leader, people are fired up about Jalen Hurts. But is he it? Is he actually taking care of business? You good, Smitty?
No, I'm not good because you just said one of the most egregious things ever on this podcast. Do you remember 2 years ago when Carson Wentz threw for 4,000 yards to absolute dick in his hand? Did he make the receivers look good? No, he threw it in the breadbasket every single game, and they still couldn't do shit playing with that JV talent. I do agree the quarterback is the most important position, and they can make the receivers look good, but we saw it 2 years ago. Like, Wentz had a Pro Bowl year, 4,000 yards. And what happened? They still couldn't do shit because they didn't have the talent.
But there was a lot of injuries. They were relying on Jason Peters at that point. And I do agree that Jordan Mailata is going to be able to step up. I have the most confidence in our lines. I think our offensive line is going to be good. And I think that you need to be running the ball a ton. And I think that Jalen Hurts is going to run the ball because I don't think he trusts himself as far as what he sees, as far as how quickly he can process things down the field. I feel like he's going to be a tuck and run guy. I think that we're going to be seeing a lot of Boston Scott out there. I think that Miles Sanders' hands have been looking suspect the entire camp. Every report I've read has said that he's dropping something every single day of camp. And in a situation where we're emulating an offense that used Nyheim Hines last year a bunch for the Colts, like, there's going to be a lot of balls thrown to the running backs. We need to be able to take care of business. I think that Jalen Hurts might throw a better, screen pass than Carson Wentz did. Carson Wentz threw some absolutely abhorrent screen passes last year. I'm thinking specifically against the one against the Browns where it was a pick six. But if Jalen Hurts, we will go as far as Jalen Hurts takes us. And that's basically what it comes down to. Last year, we were in a lot of games, even late into the season, and Carson Wentz was playing abysmally in hindsight. He wasn't playing well. But if Jalen Hurts can take us over the hump in a couple of those games, if he just at least has the nuts to kind of go for it and take care of business, and he has the mental fortitude, then we will go as far as Jalen Hurts goes.
That's some bold and wishful thinking, assuming that Jason Peters won't be in the Eagles uniform again for one quarter at a time by week three.
I mean, Jordan, my lot is playing well, but I think Andre Dillard even got hurt today. So
yeah,
One guy I am excited about this thus far in training camp is Quez Watkins. It seems like everybody's bigging up Quez Watkins. During the open practice, I saw a couple of highlights of Quez Watkins going up and getting the ball. And it's like, we drafted three wide receivers last year because we needed to take flyers on wide receivers. So why not throw a Quez Watkins in the game? Why not just have a mix of these young, fast receivers, especially with Devontae Smith out? I mean, no one's really talking much about how the fact that our first-round draft pick, who we were worried about their injury concerns, winds up getting injured.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be back before camp ends, so we know that it's not the end of the world yet, but there should be some cause for concern. And there are bright spots coming out of camp. Ruben Frank today said that the defense is looking very, very good as a whole. So, I mean, Ruben Frank, he doesn't blow smoke up the Spanx. Like, he pretty much tells it as it is, and you can trust him. So, I mean, believe in that. I do like Nick Sirianni as a person. Like, I think he brings a much-needed energy and excitement to the city from a football standpoint. But can he coach? Can Jalen Hurts play quarterback? I mean, we're going to see. And I think we'll find out pretty early.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Go ahead, Ron.
So one of the things I liked about Sirianni is the report that I saw that he was dogging Jalen Reagor, that he pulled Jalen Reagor to the side and was giving him an earful, screaming at him. And the next practice, I watched Jalen Reagor make a one-handed catch over Darius Slay. Granted, one-on-ones are going to be easier when you just have an empty practice field and nobody in the stands. But I want to see Nick Sirianni being tough because we haven't seen that. We don't know if he's a tough guy. We don't know if he's a hard ass. But this is a first-round pick. We invested a lot of resources in him. This guy is physically talented. Like, we need somebody to be able to unlock Jalen Reagor, and hopefully it's our new coach who used to be a wide receivers coach.
Oh yeah, and hopefully a first round draft pick out of TCU can respect the fact that a D3 wide receiver is basically screaming his balls off right down his throat. So we'll see. And I do think that comes in play a little bit, the respect factor, but he's apparently a player's coach. And I'm rooting for him.
And I think Coach Sirianni said that all the starters should play at least a little bit on Thursday. I actually think this might be the most anticipated preseason game I've ever seen because we have
Chip Kelly, Sam Bradford.
We kind of knew what we were going to get with Chip Kelly, a fast paced offense. We still had Mike Vick. Like we don't fucking know shit. We don't know if Jalen Hurts is going to be good. We don't know what Nick Sirianni's offense is going to look like. We don't know if Jalen Reagor is going to come out and be a beast or be a bust. We don't know if Zach Ertz is going to get 5 yards after catch. Like, we don't fucking know anything.
Yeah, well, we know that Zach Ertz still being on the roster is abysmal at this point and pointless. But I don't know where you guys were at during that preseason game when Chip Kelly took Sam Bradford a perfect, what, 6 for 6, 8 for 8 down the Green Bay Packers field in Lambeau, and we basically won the Super Bowl during that preseason game. I was at the Whitebriar, and it was quite possibly one of the greatest nights of my life.
Oh my God, people were probably going insane.
It was incredible. I mean, you won the Super Bowl right there, first preseason game with Sam Bradford.
If the Barstool Sportsbook had been open at that time, they probably would have been at, people would have driven from the Whitebriar probably on a party bus directly back to Pennsylvania so that they could dump as many bets in as possible. They probably would have made their nut in the entire year in one single night if something like that were to happen. But it's going to be fun on Thursday night for sure. I'm excited to even see how the defense looks. Like, we're going to see some different looks. I'm hearing that they're even throwing some 3-4 stuff out there. Like, it's going to be very interesting. This is a whole new palette that the Eagles are going to be painting on. And even if I'm not insanely optimistic, I'm curious. I want to see what it looks like.
Win, lose, draw, dead. We're still going to watch. We're still going to show up.
Of course.
No matter how many kicks the nuts we get. All right, Booze, one more Booze voicemail.
Hey, fellas, this is Connor from Penn State. Now that the Phillies are back to playing meaningful baseball in August, I want to get your thoughts on just the overall Philadelphia sports culture. I know Philly will obviously always be a football city. Eagles will always be the most beloved team. But I would contest that the culture is at its best when the Phillies are good. The Birds can be mediocre. The Flyers can be stuck in purgatory. The Sixers can disappoint. But if the Phillies are a competent playoff team, I think it alleviates a lot of the sadness that results from the other team's shortcomings. Baseball obviously has the longest season, the most games. You can celebrate multiple wins in a week for 5 to 6 months straight. It's the only sport that plays throughout the entire summer, so you can kick back at the bank, warm weather, drinking a beer, watching the Phillies in a pennant chase. And I really do think that the city rallies around the Phillies in a way that's very special. So am I justified in my take, or do you disagree? Thanks, guys.
I 100% think that take is justifiable. The Phillies are a lifestyle in the summer when they're good, and there's nothing better than watching them in the dog days when nothing else is going on, be in a pennant race and then follow and go down to the bank or the vet and tailgate and go down to Xfinity and just hang out during the summer and just get it going. Conversely, there's nothing worse during the summer than having your baseball team dead and buried by the All-Star break. And thank God that's finally not happening this year, because we've been through 10 straight years of sub-500 or 500 baseball, and we're finally back. Rowan, what's your take on that?
I'm going to disagree with you there, Smitty. I think that Philadelphia goes as the Eagles go, and the Eagles being good can be the tonic for everything. And I'm not just talking about sports. Like, if you got a herniated disc, if you got agita, if you have trouble sleeping, if you have seasonal depression, all of those things can literally be cured by a good Eagles team. The summer is the summer. You can have a good time in the summer. You can escape from the Phillies. You can go down the shore. You can sit on the dock of the bay and completely forget about everything that's going wrong. Obviously, the Phillies have some pull because we're this excited at a team that's 6 games over .500. It's not like they're the most dominant force in the entire league. So they definitely set a culture, but it's something special about when the Eagles are doing really well, how the city unites. It's a lot of fun when the Phillies are doing well, but it's just an absolute savage, fevered pitch when the Eagles are really at the top of their game. So it's a slight disagree from me right there.
Well, but I mean, is that exactly healthy, Roan? You said all those symptoms can be alleviated by an Eagles winning season. Can you tell me what the Eagles provide to the city during losing seasons? Because I'll tell you what, those good symptoms get erased real quick when the cause of death on my father's death certificate is the Philadelphia Eagles. And mark my words, that will be true.
Oh, it all comes back. The inflamed lower back, the agita, you get the depression, you get the anxiety. Everything seems worse. You don't want to read the newspaper. I mean, when things are down for the Eagles, they're down across the board. Crime probably goes up in the city. Everything is bad. So it's really a two-sided coin. But when things are good, it's all kumbaya when the Eagles are taking care of business.
All right, that wraps up the voicemails. We got to touch real quick on Ben Simmons. Apparently not in contact with the team as much as we thought or at all anymore. And a report came out today that he possibly could be holding out throughout the season if they don't trade him by then. I mean, Roan, you've been gone 2 weeks. Floor's yours.
Yeah, this is just it's spooky. I don't understand it. I don't know why Ben Simmons thinks that he has that power as an NBA player to be able to dictate not only that he wants to get traded, but that he wants to only go to a California team, that he's just going to turn his nose up at a Portland or this. You should be happy that you'll go somewhere where people are going to accept you right now. And I don't want to hear that he's not talking to players on the team, especially when I see him doing shooting drills with Rajon Rondo. So you're talking to Rondo, but you're not going to talk to Embiid. I don't even want to see the videos of him making shots, because I've tricked myself the last 4 summers into thinking that he was going to learn how to shoot. He could make 100 out of 100 shots from full court in an empty gym, and it wouldn't mean dick to me, because he's not going to do it when the lights are on. And all that matters is that you do it when the lights are on. And at first I thought it was a psychological problem in that he had something wrong with him, where he had a little bit of a glitch. But really, I think it's a self-perception problem, because if he's perceiving himself to be this good of a player, or if he thinks that he can trick everybody in Philadelphia into thinking that he's going to get a jumper in the offseason again, then he really must think that we're idiots and that he's a genius. He needs to shape up. He needs to be ready to play, because we don't know if we're going to make this trade, and we shouldn't be really making a trade that's stupid. We shouldn't overextend ourselves in a trade. But at the same time, if he wants to hold out, fine. Tyrese Maxey looks great. He's going to be an asshole. That's not going to change the direction that the Sixers are going in. I want to get something for him. I want him to be a willing participant on this team that's paying him over $100 million. But at the same time, I've stopped expecting rational things from Ben Simmons, and maybe it's time we all do the same.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head right from the jump. Where does he get off dictating this situation? Motherfucker, if the Sixers want to send you to the Shanghai Sharks right now and get some sort of value in between, go have 3 beers in a Fanta, pal, and enjoy China, because you are fucking out of here, pal. Like, there's no way he can say with no trade clause that he would, you know, accept going to Golden State. No, fuck you. You're going to Portland. You're going to Orlando. You're going to Indiana. You're going to wherever we can maximize our value for you, pal. And it just keeps getting more and more toxic to the point where I can't even fathom him coming back to Philadelphia next year. I just don't see it.
It doesn't make sense. And he screwed us even worse by not making this way more apparent before the draft. And you look at the packages that the Eagles were, or I'm sorry, that the Sixers were asking for from Golden State. And it was, they wanted Andrew Wiggins, James Wiseman, who was the second overall pick or first overall pick last year, after Anthony Edwards, right? And they wanted the 7th and the 14th pick this year. So they're asking for an absolute king's ransom, and they're asking for young picks. So they want to obviously continue the good prosperity in Philadelphia, and whether it's just adding on to a package of picks that we could trade for somebody later on, if it's not going to be a direct trade, or if we're going to build the team going forward. I think we need to capitalize on the championship window, but I'm also glad we're not just giving him away for whatever.
Oh, Maury's going to Maury, and we have to trust the process when it comes to Dr. Daryl. I think, honestly, that he is throwing out these King's Ransom trades, because if he actually gets a bite, okay, he can get all the draft picks, all the players, and repackage all that value for later, if not this offseason, but like close to the beginning of next season or before the trade deadline, and then do something about it instead of just holding on to Ben Simmons. But in Morey, we got to trust. And if the Spurs want to, you know, give up four draft picks, three pick swaps, and Murray, I mean, okay, but they're not going to do that. Golden State's not going to do that. I think Morey's holding out, but I also think I know what Morey wants. Yeah, that's right. I said it. I think I know what Morey wants, and that's the Dame train. And he's waiting. He's waiting for the moment. He's waiting for just to be able to make it happen. And whether it's straight up or whether it's a three-way deal with the Warriors where, like, Portland's getting Wiggins, like the salary cap work, and they're getting Wiseman, and Ben Simmons going to Golden State, and we get Dame. I have faith. I have faith that it's going to happen.
Yeah, I want it so bad. I mean, it would just be awesome. It would just be like a very exciting time in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia basketball, it would feel like a step forward. And I think we are going to wind up taking a step forward. We're definitely going to take a step. I think it's going to be forward. I'm holding out hope.
And you can't trade for not, you can't not get the maximum amount of value back. And you also cannot have players come in who are not ready to play right now, because Embiid is an MVP right now. And if they're going to win, it's got to be now. It can't be 5 years down the line with a bunch of picks. It can't be developmental players. No, they need to bring in another superstar right here, right now, some way, somehow, whether it's Dame, whether that's Beal. They got to do something more than just getting value down the line.
Yeah, no, I feel it. And I'm going to enjoy watching the Summer League team. I'm going to enjoy watching the young pieces that we have. You know, there's still stuff to be excited about in Philadelphia basketball. The window's not closed. We're just rearranging the house, though.
And that will wrap her up. First time, long time. Quick little episode. Welcome back, Rune. We're all very happy for you. Thank you very much to Jack, our guest. We'll be running into him soon. And we also have a major announcement next week that could be from a new location. Who knows? We're ready for it. Rune, you ready?
Oh, born ready, man. Love it every single time. Love to be back with the fellas. Love to be chopping it up about the Birds, about the Sixers, about the Flyers, and about the Phillies. Let's go, Phils. Let's stay hot.
You got it, baby. You got it. Thank you, everybody. We'll hang up and listen.